Welcome back, guys, to Season 3, Episode 4 of Aggie Hoops Weekly. We're going to talk about the nice, if not exceedingly difficult, win over Louisiana Monroe to start the week. And then we're going to talk about the Gonzaga Bulldogs rolling through town to absolutely crush us to close the week. We're going to talk about them both. Long-term program implications, upcoming schedule, we're going to hit it all. Let's roll.
Welcome back to Aggie Hoops Weekly. This is episode 4 of the 2019-2020 season, and we are going to be talking about the Aggies' win over Louisiana Monroe and a loss, a very lopsided loss to Gonzaga today. David, kind of start with the overarching themes. A 1-1 week here. What do you think about this one coming in?
I think we've got some things to work through, which is a kind way of putting it. After a 1-1 week that could have easily been an 0-2 week, we kind of had to steer out of the skid and barely, you know, come back, I would say, in the last 8 minutes of that Louisiana Monroe game. We finally turned that around and then really played a game against Gonzaga, the number 8 team in the country. That was a lost cause from the jump. So we've got some things to sort out, Blake, and there's not a ton of time to do it. If you look at our schedule after this game against Troy on Wednesday night, things get real in a hurry. We have, I would say, probably 4 or 5 games in a row against quality opposition at that point. So we've got some things to sort out. We're kind of running out of time, so I'm a little nervous. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, there's certainly some cause for trepidation there. But at the same time, I think we'll talk through more of this at the end of this episode. But we knew this was going to happen, right? We knew that this is what we were going to face. So Monday night, the Aggies took on Louisiana Monroe at Reed Arena. This game started off pretty decent for A&M. They looked okay. A bit more of a struggle against Monroe than I think I had anticipated this team having. But the Aggies got out to a decent lead, seven-point lead within the first 6 minutes of the half. You felt good. Okay, this is going to according to plan. And then over the course of about the next 4 minutes, Louisiana Monroe kind of tightens things back up, gets it back to a tied game. It was back and forth for probably the next 3 or 4 minutes. And then let's call it the last 6 minutes of the half. Louisiana Monroe goes on an 11-3 run to close out the half up 8, 22-30. It was one of those uh-oh moments. I think that those of us who were watching the game kind of said, oh, this is not good. This is not good at all. Now, one of the things that you'll notice in this first half, there was no appearance by Josh Nebo. TJ Starks was also out with his injury. We still haven't seen Cassius McNeely either. So there was, you know, you felt like this team was a bit shorthanded, but this is Louisiana Monroe. You should have had things well in control by halftime. So the Aggies open up second half, and it seemed like more of the same. The team just really couldn't find its rhythm. And at this point, it was early in the second half, probably about, maybe, let's call it 2.5, 3 minutes into the half. Buzz Williams brings in Josh Nebo. And at this point, A&M was actually down, or had been down by as much as 10. J.J. Chandler, the mere appearance of Josh Nebo on the floor, cued J.J. Chandler to another level. And he goes on a great run. He hits, draws a foul, picks up a couple of free throws, then knocks down a three-pointer, then knocks down another three-pointer. So there was a quick 8 points and 3 possessions for J.J., and A&M's cut the lead down to 4. From there, he hits another couple of free throws, cuts it to 2, and A&M's back in the game. And at this point, there wasn't really anything that Nebo did, but I think you could feel the team's spirits rise. There's a certain comfort to having a guy on the back line that can cover you, and knowing that you have that presence inside draws a lot of attention and opens things up for guys on the perimeter. From there, the Aggies started to pull away. They did have to kind of fight their way back through this, through the middle of the half. Monroe kind of picked up and had got the lead back up to about 5, 6, 7 points. But A&M, over the course of the final 10 minutes, asserted themselves and ended up with a 6-point lead, 63-57. All in all, a decent win for the Aggies. I think it was what happened after the game that told the story more. about all of this than anything. So for those of you who are active on Twitter, you've probably seen this, the video of Buzz Williams' comments in the post-game press conference were phenomenal. It was one of those moments where it was like, yeah, this is our guy. This is why we went and got him. Buzz basically was asked, you know, it was a light turnout. There weren't a whole lot of students at the game. There weren't a whole lot of fans at the game, period. And he was asked by a reporter, do you feel like you need to do more to promote the team, promote the program? And Buzz went on about a 6-minute spiel about, you know, his position on how you sell the program. And his point was, beating these teams is hard enough. And we've talked about this, right? There is a lot of parity in college basketball today. And that was his point, right? Getting a team prepared for the game is enough work as it is, much less trying to go and hype people up. Now, I understand that perspective. And his point is, if you start winning, if you do things the right way, people are going to show up. You don't worry about people not showing up in the first 5 games of the season. You worry about people not showing up in year 2, year 3, year 4. All in all, I think it was one of those things that really energized those of us who have been following this program and who felt like things had been in kind of a malaise over the last few years. But I wanted to get your take on the game and then Buzz's comments afterwards.
I'll hit the comments first. So the comments were incredible, and we'll link them. We'll include them in the GBH post accompanying this pod, because you guys need to listen to this. It's 6.5 minutes of just raw, unfiltered. It's not really a sanitized rant, or to call it a rant is not really genuine. It's not a sanitized response to a question. It's his raw, unfiltered thoughts on the question, what do you do when small crowds come out to the first 2 games of a program that really should be a little more rejuvenated than that? And he gives a really detailed, nuanced, thoughtful response. We'll link it. It's definitely worth listening to. And it's especially refreshing to see in the context of the absolute duds we've been getting at the press conference mic for the past 8 years. That's probably the thing that's going to jump off the screen at you guys. It's just having a really engaging, interesting guy up there at the mic. That's just the comparator. You almost can't even take it in compared to the type of thing we used to see at post-game press conferences. So we'll include it. Definitely worth listening to. But in regards to the game, the part that jumped out at me, Blake, is that we've lost games like this in the past. I mean, it's not really the metaphor of like, oh, this is the kind of game you can lose if you're not careful. We lost 2 of these last year. We lost to UC Irvine in the second game of the year, and then we lost to Texas Southern. Both games where I feel like we approached a similar decision point, not a decision point, but a similar part where maybe 10, 12 minutes left where we were down still. Against UC Irvine, we kept it close, but we still ended up losing. And then in last year against Texas Southern, at that same point, the wheels just fell off. We ended up losing to Texas Southern by 15. And so it was nice to see just 1 year later to see us approach that exact same scenario and then to turn it around and to play much better ball for the last 10, 12 minutes and to pull the game out. And the second point that I want to echo what you said exactly. One bid conferences can ball now. I mean, these teams, you know, in these home buy-in games, they bite their host more often than I think people really realize. Just look no further than Evansville walking into freaking Rupp Arena and knocking off number 1 Kentucky just a handful of days ago. So these things happen. Every team has between 6 and 8 of these home buy-in games, and you will get tested in at least a couple of them. And when that happens, you have to make sure you're ready to play that day. So we were. Job done with the W. And there was no other basketball played that week, right? We have nothing else to discuss. Good pod. Show over.
Show over. Yeah. Good win. We're done. No, I will. Before we leave this one behind, I will say Michael Ertel, the guard for Louisiana Monroe, was phenomenal. That kid was outstanding. He had 25 points, 9 rebounds, and he looked like a smaller guard. I don't know how big he was, but for that guy to come up with 9 boards, he was actually their leading rebounder and their leading scorer. Also added a couple of steals, 3 assists. I mean, he was great. I was really impressed. I don't know how that kid is not at a bigger school, you know, playing a start. He could walk in and play a starting role at A&M right now. So I was very impressed with his quality. All right. So with that being said, let's jump into the second matchup of this week and a throttling at home against the Gonzaga Bulldogs.
It was a throttling, but before we get to the throttling, which it was, we're going to start with the opening 9 minutes, because I have to say we really did come out punching. There was a good crowd, announced a shade over 10 grand, which is a really, really nice draw for a November November game, regardless of the opponent. And we came out and we played well. We fed off the energy. We were flying around on defense. We were rotating really well. We drew some charges. Gonzaga was still getting some decent looks. They weren't knocking him down. We were rebounding well, and we were getting just enough done on offense to keep things close. And I think, Blake, we had a 14-11 lead is what I have here, with a shade under 12 minutes remaining. And I made a joke on Twitter at that point about how it felt like a sugar crash was coming, because we just had that like hyper toddler type energy of, you know, associated with a big game at home where you're a big underdog and don't really have much to lose. We kind of looked like that, and I saw that crash coming. As someone who just took a four-year-old to Disney World in the last 4 days, I'm quite familiar with what a sugar crash looks like. And we crashed hard. We crashed so hard because Gonzaga closed the half with a 29-5 run. And to call it a run is almost like a run implies that we were like sliced across the arm and we eventually stopped the bleeding. They basically slit our throats and let us bleed out for the last 12 minutes of the first half. The only reason it was 29-5 and not 29-3 is that we actually hit a couple of free throws with time essentially expired at the end of the first half. So they just, I mean, they murdered us and left us for dead in a ditch to close the first half. Like, it was one of the most dominating stretches of basketball I've seen executed against us at Reed Arena, maybe that I've ever seen. We'll have to talk about that, where that kind of falls in the pantheon of like truly awful stretches of A&M basketball. But we had 6 turnovers. We were 1-for-17 from the field. We couldn't block out. Gonzaga got open threes at will. I mean, pick your poison, right? You can't even pick one reason why things went so badly. We were just blown off the floor. There's no other way to put it. And in the second half, you know, Gonzaga did what good teams do. We hung around. That is to say, we kept the deficit around 15-20. But they didn't allow it to get any closer than that. They actually put together a little 10-0 spurt. This actually was a run. It was not an extended mauling. A nice little quick run that extended the lead from 20-30. At that point, I think it was 62-32 Gonzaga with whatever minutes remaining, 8, 10, 12. Didn't really matter at that point. We had fans headed for the exits. So, yeah, the rest of it didn't really matter. It played out the string. Final score, 79-49. How do you feel about that one, man? I really struggle. I put in my final recap. I was of two minds. Obviously, things weren't going to be fixed yet, but I did expect it to be a little bit better than this. So where do you fall in that decision?
I wish I could say I expected it to be better than this. For those of you who may or may not recall, A&M went to Gonzaga last year and lost by a score of 94-71. So a 23-point loss on the road. Losing by 30 at home was a tough one. I saw it going marginally better. I expected a 20-25-point loss, in all honesty. This is the number 8 team in the country, and they're solid, right? These guys are good. I expected A&M to struggle. The struggles that you've seen from this team early on against lesser competition were indicative of where this team is at right now. In this sense, I think you have to be realistic about what you saw, right? A, you saw a really good team dominate A&M, and you saw A&M at least manage the game, right? From the sense that you could have just packed it in and called it good, and it could have been a 50-point rout. A&M kept it reasonably close in the second half to only have a 9-point deficit in the second half, to be outscored 39-30 after only putting up 19 in the first half. The fact that you got 30 in the second, hey, that's good. This is progress. This team is growing. This is one of those learning experiences for the young guys. They're going to have to go through these lumps and these bruises, and at some point they'll come around and they'll figure things out.
So I think Blake, that's a good way to wrap up the actual action on the floor part of the discussion. But there is a larger discussion to have as well, which is, where does this result stand relative to what people were expecting? Obviously, we'll get into it. It feels like we shouldn't have had expectations to win this game, but I did see things on social media. It seems like there were different takes about this game, right? Some people were saying like, this is totally fine. This is a first early step in a very long process. Don't worry about it. There were others saying, yeah, but still, this was a little much. So I'm going to let you know how I feel, and then I'm going to get your take. I tend to side at least slightly with the people who were expecting a little more that night. Now, I'm not saying we should have won, but I did think that the way it played out, to effectively not have the game matter beyond the opening 9 minutes, that's a bit much. I mean, if you take a look at Gonzaga's other results, they did end up beaten everybody by double digits this year. But our effort against Gonzaga doesn't really track that well, even compared to some of the lighter teams that they've played. I would have expected us to at least put a bit more of, you know, of a roadblock in their way as the first P5 team they've faced this year. I'm interested to see how the rest of the non-conference schedule runs. What I fear might happen is I think we might end up looking like by far the weakest P5 effort against them. So while I do agree, this is obviously, you know, not an indictment on the Buzz Williams process, I think it might be a little fair to have asked for a little more that night. Where do you fall?
Yeah, I think it's completely fair to ask for more, but I think that you struggled to beat Louisiana Monroe by 6. You only posted a 14-point win over Northwestern State, who is admittedly not great competition. And I know we were just talking about the parity of college basketball, but if you want to be a team that has a shot at knocking off Gonzaga, you've got to show it against the lesser opponents and put them away early and often, right? And we haven't shown an ability to do that. I think the thing that concerns me is the consistency or the lack thereof from your experienced players. Let's talk Savion Flagg. He had 4 points against Monroe and 6 points against Gonzaga. 10 points in the last 2 games from your team's supposed best player. Yeah, and I won't take that mantle from him. It's a bad stretch. Does this mean he's not a great player? No, but that's not going to cut it. That's not going to work. Now, Chuck Mitchell looked great against Gonzaga. When he got into the flow of the game, this is actually the best that we've seen from Chuck this year. I was really pleased with his performance. It was great to see Nebo out there. He looked good. Andre Gordon had his moments over the last week where you felt like, okay, this kid's turning the corner.
He had a great
Quentin
week.
Jackson. Yeah, he had a great week. Quentin Jackson struggled against Gonzaga. That was surprising. I was expecting more from Quentin in this one. He only had 16 minutes, so I don't know if it was just his performance or what fed into that. I just he didn't log a lot of minutes, didn't ever really look like he was settled in. Yeah, I think it's interesting the lack of consistency that you're seeing from this group right now. Your leading scorer one night will be back of the pack the next. So I think that this is, in that regard, this is all very much expected. Those who are ready to jump off the Buzz bandwagon, I urge you not to. This is exactly what I think you and I discussed in the prior episode, where we said this team is not going to contend for any type of postseason berth in our minds, right? An NIT bid is somewhat of a long shot. So yes, I think we wanted a better showing against Gonzaga, but I'm not surprised that this early into Buzz's tenure, you didn't get it. What's the biggest thing that we struggled with last year? Lack of shooting, right? You couldn't
shoot.
Inability to shoot the ball well. What did you see in this game against Gonzaga? An inability to shoot the ball well. The Aggies shot 15% from 3. They were 3 of 20 from behind the arc, and they were at 30.4% from the floor. Looks really familiar, and at some point, you are what you are, right? This team has not been constructed to shoot the ball, right? And a lot of that is the legacy. A lot of that is the returning players. So as a program, this program had not done a great job over the last few years of going to get good shooters. So I think we're going to have to develop guys and go find those talented shooters who can put the ball in the hole.
This is why the next month, that's why the rest of 2019 is so important, because it could very well be that Gonzaga is the best team we play all year, and that it's not a relevant data point to actually assess how things are going. But in the between now and the end of 2019, we play some games that are pretty close to a coin flip that are going to be really, really interesting to track. I'm talking about Harvard, Texas, Oregon State. There's a likelihood that we play someone in the Temple USC space in that third game, or Temple or Maryland in that second game, in Orlando, and maybe someone like USC in the third game. We're going to have between 3 and 5 games that the advanced analytics and the lines would suggest should be within a few points. That's where I think we're going to actually see progress, because we really don't have that many buy-in games left. If you look, I mean, we only have, I would say, 3 left. We have Troy, A&M Corpus, and Texas Southern. So we have those 3. We have the games I referenced, and then it's game time. So that's why, and I think now we can transition to talking about Troy, because Troy is really our last shot to get things right, to sort out our rotation, our proposed starting 5, our substitution pattern. Are we going to stick to this cover 2 defense we talked about last week, where we're always flying out high and trying to challenge people at the three-point line. Those decisions need to happen pretty quickly, and Troy's our last chance to get this in a comfortable home environment against somebody that we should handle with ease.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Troy is your last real tune-up that you have before you get to some serious competition. You know, you look at where Troy is right now. They're 0-3. They've lost to UAB, Chattanooga, and Indiana. This is a team you should handle. This is a team that shouldn't give you many troubles. I think that's what you want to see, right? You want to see A&M come in, dominate, control the game start to finish. You're at home. You need to be shooting the ball well. You need to have a good rotation. But at the same time, there are now questions around what your rotation looks like.
There are, and I'm not really sure what the answer is there. I would suggest that based on the last week, Gordon has played his way into the starting lineup. I would also suggest that Quentin Jackson has played his way out of the starting lineup with his effort against Gonzaga. Perhaps we've landed on our eight. It looks like Yeezy and Mark French still get a handful of minutes, but for the most part, it looks like we've got our eight pretty well sorted. I don't know. I just want to see something slightly more convincing against Troy, something to ease the mind heading into the tournament in Orlando, the game against Texas, the game against Oregon State. You know, the games that are going to be a little tighter, where I would suggest that if we were to get completely blown out of the gym, that would be slightly more concerning than the fact that it happened against what is a consensus top 10 team in the country.
And you're absolutely right. And I think that this is all complicated by the fact that you have now lost TJ Starks for an indeterminate period of time. For those who aren't aware, and I'm sure that's very, very few of you at this point, TJ was arrested for possession of marijuana on, I believe, Thursday. So it was announced that he has been suspended indefinitely, and we don't really have a picture of what that looks like for him to return to the program at this point.
We don't, and I'm going to echo my thoughts, Blake, that I delivered shortly after the exhibition game. He didn't look right. He didn't look comfortable on the floor, and that was something that jumped off the court to everyone who was in attendance that night. The other returning guys generally looked like they had found their spot in the new offense and the new regime. He looked lost. He looked lost running the point with the second unit. He looked lost with the first unit when we had him inexplicably standing in the corner shooting threes, which I can't think of many things he's less suited to do than to act as a, you know, P.J. Tucker-esque, you know, 3-and-D guy. But he just looked like he didn't have a home. He ended up getting hurt with about 10 to 12 minutes left in that game. And where we were sitting for the exhibition game, we were sitting right above the home tunnel. And he limped off, and he went down the tunnel, and he just looked frustrated. And I couldn't help but wonder, is that the last time I'm going to see him in an A&M uniform? It just felt, things looked so disjointed that night that I had that nagging thought as I saw him walking out. I don't know if that's the case. That might be a little too dramatic, but this is not a situation for the listeners. This is not a situation where this guy is home and comfortable and has a role and just made a bad mistake. It was a bad mistake in combination with the fact that he doesn't really have anywhere to land in this program right now. There doesn't appear to be a clear spot for him. I don't know what that means in terms of how quickly he can come back or whether he will want to come back, but I just wonder, Blake, I wonder if we're going to see him on the court again.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. There is a certain possibility that we may not see TJ Starks in the maroon and white anymore. I hope that's not the case, but you have to remember he spent a pretty decent amount of time last year in Billy Kennedy's doghouse for things that we still don't know if they were basketball related or not. You know how there's just some times where it just doesn't quite work out for a guy. You see the potential, you see the flash, and you're like, okay, when this guy figures it out, he's going to be great. And then it just never quite works out for him, whatever the circumstances are. I'm starting to wonder if that's going to be the TJ Stark story in this case.
I just wonder the same thing, but I have no doubt that if that's where it goes, he will kill it wherever he goes next. But let's not get that far ahead of ourselves yet. I do think there's a chance that this blows over in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Obviously, he's immensely talented. People forget he was, for large stretches, the best player on the floor in our win over North Carolina, that 20-point win in the second round. He's got that ceiling that's worth trying to hold on to. I don't know. I still wonder how it's going to play out, but it's certainly worth giving him one more shot.
I think so. I hope he has the patience to stick around and try to make it work, because I think he's immensely talented, but you know, I can understand the certain level of frustration on his part as well. So with that being said, the Aggies take on Troy Wednesday night. Everybody get to Reed Arena, 7:00, support the team. And looking forward to seeing what kind of performance we turn in on this one.
Sounds good, Blake. And then in our next episode, we'll recap that game and we'll talk about the upcoming Orlando Invitational. We open with a game against Harvard on Thanksgiving. So if your family's awkward political conversation gets too weird, you can find a sweet, sweet release in the home of Aggie basketball. We're going to play Thursday, Friday, Sunday that weekend. And looking forward to those games, Blake, because I think we're going to learn a lot about our team that weekend.
Yep, should be fun. Have a nice little break there. Get a little bit of a week off for the team to rest, get their legs underneath them, and then get some Thanksgiving basketball. So it should be a lot of fun.
Sounds good to me. Talk to you soon, buddy.
All right.